the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
One more face, Dyson Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures, we were looking like you might be up after yesterday's huge sell up, but not now. S&P down 13, well, only. NASDAQ futures up 43, but it clearly wasn't not the bounce yet we're looking for, although we have CPI at 730. Remember, yesterday the Dow was down 670, S&P down 109. NASDAQ down 469, so that was a really, really crummy day. Gold was down, silver was down, crypto was down. I don't think anything was much up yesterday. But actually, some of the retail stocks were up. Walmart was up, Home Depot was up, kind of bizarre there. McDonald's ended up on the day up. So after the earnings, up, then way down, then it came back to being up. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning. Yes, you do.
How are you, bud? How's Indianapolis?
And I'm able to talk today.
Good. How was, as we used to call it, India no place?
India, no place. Hey, I like Indianapolis. I'm actually pretty fond of the city myself. People are nice. The city isn't all crapped up or anything like that. And I generally like it. But I'm going to be locked up, doing Ivy Tech stuff all day. So it's not like I'm going to experience the city. I'm going to go home afterwards.
Well, there was a time back before every city got pretty big. That Indianapolis was the only city over a million people that did not have a navigable waterway. Now, of course, there's a lot of them. I mean, Las Vegas doesn't have one. I'm not so sure Las Vegas is a million yet, but I think they probably are. But that was their claim to fame. They were kind of a transportation hub for both highways and railroads to a certain extent.
There's also a naval base near Bloomington.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, the Crane Naval Warfare Base, which also is a naval base without any water. I think they call it Crane NSA now. So I don't think it's strictly Navy anymore.
Well, you think you'd need some water with a Navy base, but not necessarily.
I tell you, we I was involved in this several years back as we developed a very specific Department of Defense logistics program for them.
Well, cool.
So, not only do you get some of the standard logistics stuff, but you learn how in the DOD, how you do inventory and maintenance and what the purchasing law is and what budgeting law and how that works. Because you get a lot of people, whether they're civilians working on the base, whether they're military, or whether they're people coming out of, transitioning out, but might want to work as a contractor in the military. It's an opportunity to pick up some of the knowledge you need to have a successful career after getting out of the Army or the Navy or whatever branch.
Well, cool. When we were doing all that stuff about the veterans stuff, it was pretty amazing. I guess there's been some progress there with the difference between when guy used to work for us, JD, who's actually a little older than me. When he got out of the Army, it had to be 1973 or 4. And when Wayne was in there, Wayne's probably a little older, and he said, basically, they ask your address, they go, you still got the same address? He goes, now my parents moved. I mean, I don't even know what my address is. And they basically, he goes, they didn't remember if they gave him a bus ticket. Where when Hale got out, they kind of set him up with the GI Bill and everything at Washington, wherever the hell he went, right? I mean, they were very, you know, there was a lot of help, for lack of a better term. So I think the armed forces do a little more of that, don't they? For some reason, they're not too quick on giving you the stuff they promise you. They don't give you citizenship like they promise you, it doesn't appear. But, you know, maybe that's people not applying, I don't know. But it seems
yeah,
like...
Yeah, I think they, you know, we got this when Mike Murphy was on and talking about it. If you don't go get it yourself, don't count on anybody to stand up and go, okay, here's what you're eligible to get.
Yeah, you or know, here's what we promised you.
Yeah, there is nothing like that. They might fulfill the promise, but you have to go initiate the process yourself.
Hey,
which would sound like, you know, sounds like government to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, except I often, well, as we've aged, Kevin, we see people around us maybe having some health issues and so forth, it becomes amazingly obvious that if you don't have your own, you know, your own wits about you, you better have an advocate near you as you wander through the med system. And
or you damn well better be advocating for yourself,
yeah,
too.
You better be either conscious and awake or whatever, which unfortunately not everybody is. It seems like there's a, just in the last few days, you know, Stocks and Jacks, I always come across stuff that seems to me to be tied all together and other people think I'm nuts. I noticed the thread that everybody sent around regarding, was it the University of Illinois and the college and how many people they bring in from other out of state and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Hal that sent it around? And
yep.
I noticed Melissa Bean, who has not been a rep for a while, is now running again for a seat in Illinois. And she was the lady I quizzed, asked a couple questions to in a shindig in Washington.
You interviewed her?
No. We both gave speeches.
Oh, okay.
I gave a speech on protecting portfolios. This is when Mesro, when Jim Tyree was still alive, and Mesro invited us out. They had all their biggest correspondents, which we were not one of their biggest. And they had a shindig, and they asked me to give a speech on protecting portfolios with options and so forth. And she was the keynote speaker. Let's not confuse that. She was the keynote speaker, not me.
It wasn't you, huh?
No, it wasn't me. But I was okay. I mean, I know. I did okay. I think half the people don't tell what I was talking about. But I look at that, and then I look at the Bears Stadium. And to me, it's all the same subject, Kevin. We somehow or another, we forgot the idea that we need to review stuff. And nobody's job appears to be to see the thing we started out, are we on the right road? I mean, the specific, I'm not going to bore you with the full conversation, but this was right after 2007, 2008, right? So it was a while ago. And every weekend it seemed like banks were getting taken over or banks were going under and ended up being part of another. Kevin, you know more about that than me. But
in the industry.
Yeah, and it is, but this was, you know, right during the 2008 fiasco, so it was happening.
Yeah,
you know,
so I was in the industry before that when things were clipping along, and it was still like every week someone was getting acquired.
I got
acquired three times and was involved in five acquisitions as the acquiring bank.
But you weren't one of those, and on a Friday you were one name, and then Monday you were another, were you?
Because I was never involved in taking over a failed bank.
Well, because these in the deal,
these were always agreed acquisitions.
Okay, we're not talking about those. And when I was asked her a question about, I said, you know, Ms. Bean, I assume since you're from Illinois and it's a pretty free banking state, that you would like to see more banks rather than less. And she goes, oh, absolutely. And I said, and you'd be concerned if banks go under. Oh, absolutely. I said, okay, last weekend, and there was a couple of banks I just had on the tip of my tongue, I said, this bank went under, and they ended up being bought by some other bank. I don't know why I remember this. It was like the day before I heard it. And I said, you know, it looks like the new bank ponied up, you know, $20 million or some number, and the the government ate, or FDIC ate, you know, $50 million in bad loans, and the new guys get, like, you know, $2 billion in deposit, two locations, five drive-thrus, and I go, that's one hell of a deal. I go, does anybody at the end of the year, you know, if I don't know what committees you're on, does anybody on, like, the banking committee and three, four guys from each side on the committee sit there and review these on a Tuesday and find out if, whether they're crooked or not, or somebody sitting on somebody's lap? Or seems to me like these things need, these are sweetheart deals. And she looks at me and she goes, well, why would we review something like that? We have staff do that or something. And I go, really? And then, but then this, Kevin, I never did this before, all through college. I raised my hand again and I go, okay, if that's the way it's going to be, if I put together a group with 20 million people, can I get on the list? She looked at me like I had four heads. She goes, well, no. What do you mean, no? if it's that good of a deal, why can't I get it? I didn't want to, that's as far as I went, because I didn't want to ruin the whole thing for everybody, but it's the same thing. This thing with Illinois, and we had a bunch of guys on the show comment on it, and I can see it happening, Kevin. I can see someday, somewhere, and I look back, you were on the show with me that one day. I was going through all the different, there's a website, it's run by, some college group. Now you can't get in. If you go in there once or twice, now you can't get in unless you join or something, so I didn't do that. Every single school, in Illinois, there's a boatload of them, and I'm sure in Indiana there are too, down to the junior colleges, these guys go back and tell you maybe 1995, 2000, somewhere in there. Tuition, room and board, every year, out of state, in state. It's an amazing sight. It seemed to me like around 2000, Kevin, and I might be wrong on that, is when people started doing the out-of-state, in-state stuff. Even the junior colleges in Illinois started doing it. Like Richard J. Daley, if you come from Indiana, you got to pay twice as much. Kind of crazy. So if you're going to do that, my first question is your intent to screw the people out of state, or is your intent to give the people in-state a break because they're paying taxes? I'll ask you that. I'm not asking you personally. I'm saying, is that which is their intent, you think?
Well, I think their intent is to get, and I think I put this in email thread when we were discussing it, is they want people who are going to pay cash on the barrel because it's good for their cash flow, and people who don't require financial aid. So, first of all, they're going to pay more than the average Illinois resident, even if the Illinois resident pays cash on the barrel. And so that's better for cash flow. But in addition to that, you get a lot of people who are using financial aid, whether it's loans or whether it's grants or whether it's scholarships. All of those, and I know this as as an instructor, because I have several reporting hurdles that I have to clear every term. Is this student actively participating in class? Is this, all these kinds of reporting things that you have to do. So when you start looking at financial aid, you still get paid. You're going to be paid somewhat more slowly because you're getting paid by the government. So that's not good for your cash flow. And there's a pain in the ass, a process pain in the ass that you have to deal with it, which includes staffing, additional staffing and so on. So I am sure that despite the intent behind everything, and I think, that the abundance of financial aid has also done more to drive up the price of college than anything else. But setting that aside, that you have a real motivation for people to make a business decision that makes a lot of sense, even though it doesn't serve the market that the school is intended to serve.
I did remember that. I'd read that email of yours. It's an amazing rendition of how things have turned out, but doesn't come close to answering the question. That the 10 MOPES that were on the committee that put this thing together in 1995, what was their intention? They didn't think through anything you just talked about. And that's my theme here, by the way.
Okay, the 10 MOPES on what committee? Let's just make sure.
Education committee at the state of Illinois. Right.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, at the Senate, with the state of Illinois, or the House or something. Is their intent to say, okay, we've got X number of people from Illinois, X number of people from out of state, why don't we give the people, is their intention at day one to give the people of Illinois a break because they've been paying taxes here all life like they did in California? Or is it say, God, these people from out of state, screw them, 20% of them from out of state, let's charge them more? I don't think they thought, this is my point, Kevin, I don't think they thought through anything of what you just said. And they should have.
It is totally the unintended consequences argument, much of which, when we talk of unintended consequences, it's not what they intended when they created the, you know, did whatever legislative thing. It's that the consequences don't match the goals. And because sometimes when we say unintended consequences, they're entirely predictable.
Well, that's my point. Yeah, I mean, I guess the part to me that's missing here is if the intention was, I'll just lob this one out there because I wasn't in a room. If the intention was to give the 80% of the people that were University of Illinois on such and such a date, whatever the number was, if the intention was to give them a discount, somebody in the room, somebody from, I'm not even going to say a grad school, from one of your classes in economics could say, okay, where's this liable to roll if we do this? What are a predicted consequence. And somebody might say, well, if the chairman is looking to maximize revenue and maybe his own bonus of the chairman of Illinois, it's University of Illinois, this could lead to people from Illinois getting skunked out and other people being waved in because they're paying more. So you would think, in my decent world, that every 5 years, some, I'm going to say congressional committee in Washington, some state committee, somebody's job would be, put it on the calendar, every 3 years, the education committee should review how this is going. And if it's going the wrong way, we need to address it again. That's the part that I don't understand why it's always missing, Kevin. I mean, the politics, let's take, you know, Biden's infrastructure bill. The deal was it was going to make things so much more efficient that our tax revenue is going to go up. And, oh, by the way, it's not going to be a net drain. It's going to be a net positive. Read Trump's two tax cuts. Oh, man, it's going to make so much more business. We're going to have the taxes are going to increase. Okay, well, both of those are pretty wild statements. Somebody's job, there's got to be a finance committee or whoever does taxes, 2 years from now to sit down and say, how's it going? We like the idea that there's no review. Why is that? And I'm going to kind of wander into the stadium argument here.
Well, and sometimes there is review, and then they wind up fighting over it. And that's like the subsidies, the healthcare subsidies that we've fought about over the last several months. That one did expire. And then it got renewed, and then it expired again. And when people were saying, no, we're not doing this anymore, all of a sudden it's like you're taking from the people. It was never intended to be there this long. So there are some things that get reviewed. There just aren't enough of them.
Well, I mean, if you review the thing, go back to the colleges. If you're going to review it and say, man, this isn't working, all it's doing is preventing people from Illinois from getting a discount. You know, some stupido reporter is going to pick that one up and say, we just dropped the discount on people from Illinois, so we're screwing people from Illinois. Well, if it turns out only 10, well, this is an exaggeration, if only 10% of the students are from Illinois now because they've totally screwed the people from Illinois because of the way it's written, all of a sudden, you're right, this becomes a political fight instead of saying, wait a minute, this has not turned out as we expected. We have to fix it. I don't understand, Kevin, but maybe it's because of what I do for a living. If I do 10 earnings plays in a week, in earnings week, if I can have two or three nice winners, a couple of small winners, a few we manage to work back to break even, and two losers, I have a great week. I'm used to doing stuff that doesn't work out and just trying to fix it. Why does everybody else seem to think that's such a problem with their ego and whatever else? Why is that a problem? As my grandfather used to say, he who tries and fails is better than a guy who never tried at all. What is with the attitude that if all of a sudden I screw up once, I can't talk to my neighbors, the press is all over me? I mean, I don't get it. I mean,
That takes courage. So number one, and we don't have a lot of courageous people, especially in government. But number two is you have to be driven by some overall vision or goal or something like that. So if you're saying that the University of Illinois, our primary goal is to provide a great quality education for the citizens of Illinois, for the citizens of the state of Illinois, that's the primary goal. You may have some additional goals. You may want to import some great students from elsewhere, and so you know you may believe in all of that. But if that's your primary goal, then every decision you make along the way should move you closer to that goal, or should enhance the progression to that goal. When you look at the decisions made, they're not supporting that goal. So either that was never a goal, or the decision-making process really, really sucks.
What does the governor got to do? Go up and put a poster and tap it up on the wall when they meet at the university trustees, or what?
Well, yeah, that's how leadership works. It is all about being able to articulate what your vision is and being able to tell people how you're going to move there. Yeah, that's how it works.
Well, how do you stop other than seemingly individual morals that we don't seem to have much of anymore? And it's, you know, I know it's a rough statement, but how do you stop the trustees from going, gee, you know, these people from China are paying $60,000, the people in Illinois are paying $25,000. Boy, we got to get a few more of these people coming in at $60,000. How do you stop somebody from maybe not saying that, and that's the way I just said it, but at least thinking that, Kevin, when bonuses are involved and you'd like your university to be bigger than Wisconsin or bigger than Michigan, but you like to be one of the, you know, the big swinging dicks, basically, and you know, the only way to get there is more money, they think. So however you get there, it's okay. That's another big brother sitting on the other shoulder, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I know how Indiana does funding, so I don't know how Illinois does it. But Indiana's is kind of interesting because we get paid partially for enrollment, but we get paid more when students complete their programs.
Now, when you say we, so are you on the same?
We Ivy Tech, but every Indiana college.
You think you're on the same formula as Purdue and IU?
Different dollar amounts, but yeah, we all have the same goals. So
really,
it is how many enroll, how many come back, because persistence is important, and then how many complete. And each of those hurdles gets you more budget money. If you aren't getting students through the program, getting degrees, certificates, whatever programs they're in, if you aren't getting students completion, if you aren't getting them the value that they use to sign up, you don't get paid as much. You don't get paid just to have people here, you know, people in the classroom or on your campus. You get paid to actually educate them. That's been Indiana's model as long as I've been involved, and probably way longer than that.
Oh, do you think it's different than other states?
I don't know, because I haven't been inclined to look into what other states do.
So it seems to make sense, which is rare.
Yeah, it does. My God, yes, we can't be having that.
Well, how do you now when we move into the stadium situation for the Bears? And I'm stunned, Kevin, by the lack of. I guess I'm over being stunned. The amount of press that is flying back and forth. Not one of the press things explains anything in enough detail where a normal citizen could get any kind of an opinion other than I like the Bears or I don't. Is that, you know, Wayne saying they just fired the whole sports department at the Washington Post, or is it we don't want people to say that? We're pro Bears. We're going to get the contract for hot dogs on the 50-yard line, or why is there such a dearth of knowledge? And I'll kind of give you an example. There's all kinds of examples of stadiums that were built with public money that have been clunks, including Soldier Field, including White Sox Park. There's a lady who wrote two or three things about minor league stadiums in Salt Lake City. Kevin, it's the exact same formula. The people who put the stadium up, the contractors, the builders, the people who rent them the portalettes, the people who do security, everybody makes a fortune. The mayor immediately in Arlington Heights, all they're doing is trying to pass out those kinds of little trinkets to their friends. At the end of the day, the team makes money, and the people in the municipality or whatever it is lose money. It absolutely works out every single time the same damn way. And we have a situation where anybody who's old enough to remember, Detroit Lions got such a deal up in Pontiac, which is about the same distance, maybe a little further than Indiana. It worked out like a fart in church, right? And yet the people who put the stadium up and who had the contracts for security or telephones or pay phones in those days, Kevin, I'm sure they're all the one percenters. And yet we continually lack this knowledge of people. I mean, the thing in Arlington Heights, it's now the state of Illinois needs to give the Bears a little infrastructure help. And, oh, by the way, they need some stability on taxes, or what do they call it? Nobody else has stability on taxes.
No, yeah, actually some people do, but we can come back to that. I want to talk about Soldier Field first, and this is not defending the Bears, but it is exposing something about the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago. When they did the project, the Bears and the NFL put in $200 million towards the Soldier Field renovation. And so that left $387 million for the public money, the public stuff that went into it. Now, you can argue whether there should have been a dime, not one dime, doesn't matter. That's the way it worked out. Since then, the bonds that they issued for those, and they were supposed to be paid by hotel motel tax that never covered the cost of the interest on the bonds. But the state kept refinancing them. They have refinanced both the interest and principal on that to the point where it's that initial $387 million is now over $700 million. The Bears didn't do that. The government did that. So that's a big problem because, they either needed to do something about the taxes that were supposed to pay for those, or they needed to pay for it out of budget. But instead, they chose to just roll it, mix it in, refinance it, reissue bonds, and now they're up to $700 million owing.
How about the
the show for it?
How about the no-escalation clause on the rent?
They've done it three times.
How about the no-escalation clause on the rent?
Oh, yeah, I know. We can complain about a whole lot of things, but that's probably the biggest problem that they have right now is that they owe $700 million. And if the Bears leave, what are they going to do about that with Soldier Field?
Okay, the Bears paid a total of $120 million in what, rent? 20 years?
Yeah, I told you I wasn't going to. I told you I wasn't. I had no intention of defending the Bears in this.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that we understand the whole picture, and part of that whole picture is mismanagement by the state.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I'm not without a doubt. But my point is, if you and I would have had a contract 20 years ago, I guarantee you we're not working today. A lot of people make money on these things. We're just not the people. And the rest of the people are dumb as a rock collectively, not individually. Because the Bears are on TV, they somehow think... Now, the solution ought to be, Kevin, really. Let's have a vote in the city for every taxpayer to pony up $100 for the Bears. If everybody votes yes, I got no problem with it. I really don't. But this idea...
Yeah, that could work. That's what we should be doing for every damn initiative that people want to do.
Well, then it would be a real republic, right? A real democracy. But, I mean, the idea, I mean, and you look at what the Bears, and the part that, Kevin, I really don't give a shit what anybody does, as long as they know what they're doing, and it don't bother anybody else. It just rubs me the wrong way because of, spent a lot of time in education and didn't pay it, fortunately, when I went to doing a lot of money. But when somebody says, here's the plan, we're going to build a stadium, this is the bozo from Portage, We're gonna build a stadium for the Bears. We're gonna charge them rent, and over a certain period of time, the Bears will have the stadium. It'll become theirs. Kevin, yeah. I don't have any problem with that.
The rest of the Northwest Indiana proposals are the same thing. It's basically it's a rent with option to buy.
Okay, so I have zero problem with that. The only problem I have is, okay, that's the opening paragraph. What are the numbers? If it's $4 billion and the Bears are going to pay $300 million a year in rent for 20 years, then they get to buy it, I have no problem with it. If they're going to pay $2 million in rent, now I got a problem with it. Isn't it the numbers? I mean, how many times was any?
It's always the numbers. Yeah, it's always the numbers.
But we never get the numbers. That's
numbers. The numbers aren't presented to the voters. So now let's go to Arlington Park. What are the Bears asking to do at Arlington Park?
Thank you for that question. They're asking for infrastructure improvements.
Yeah.
Okay. What is unique about Arlington Park in terms of infrastructure? There isn't any.
Actually, there is, in that no matter what they do, I mean, they could develop the property for non-sports, just imitate what Glenview did when the airbase closed, and do a lot like that, maybe correct some things and so on. They do not have the entry and egress capacity there to handle the traffic. It's very, very limited in terms of what they can
now,
do.
Now what I'm talking about.
That's part of the infrastructure. But part of the infrastructure is power, it's sewer, it's all of that kind of stuff.
Which Arlington Park has none because it was a racetrack, except for where the clubhouse was and maybe a little bit where the stables were. No water, no sewer, no power.
Yeah, they had to have sanitary because the horses crap a lot.
I'm saying over in that area, but I'm going to say 10% of the acres had any of that. Very similar to the South Loop, by the way.
Okay.
Now, so that's an issue.
What are the Bears proposing for the construction?
That's what I'm saying. That there's no detail. They want the state to do the infrastructure.
Actually, there is.
Okay.
It's not great detail, but what their plan is there's 300 some odd acres over there. And their plan is to build the stadium on 100 acres. That's the one where they want the tax predictability. So, again, you can say nobody should get that or anybody should get that or whatever, but a lot of businesses do that when they come into the state, and they get the same kind of long-term tax assurance. So that's why I said it's not nobody else. They're asking for what other people get. Whether they deserve it, that's a different argument, but that's what they're asking to do. The rest of the property, they intend to either sell or be the landlord there for some mixed use, some entertainment, for a whole bunch of things that are part of the plan. And those, they're not looking for any tax abatement there. In fact, if they sell off a lot of it and, people build there, they build out a sort of a town center type of thing like they have at the Glen in Glenview. If they do any of that, those are subject to the same tax evaluation rules that everybody else has.
How the hell are they going to sell all that off? Where are people going to park?
What's that?
How are they going to sell that off? Where are people going to park?
Well, the 100 acres includes parking.
But I don't know how you sell that. When a family's making $220 million bucks a year, how do you sell that to somebody who just had their taxes go up 30%
one year? I get it. That's a whole different argument. Yeah. But I think it's important that we understand what the ask is before we say they just want they want infrastructure and they want tax breaks on the whole property. I just want to make sure we're clear about what's involved in there.
Well, okay, and where I'm.
And again, now you get into philosophy. Should we do that or not? Should we do any of it or not? And I don't have a problem with any argument that says not.
I'll say this. I probably wasn't clear the first time. I don't care what we do. I just don't want it hidden. I think you and I are perfectly capable. If the whole plan is put together and stuck in front of us, give us an hour, Kevin. And I think after 20 years, in 20 years, you and I will tell everybody what the hit's going to be to the population, given certain inflation rates and certain, whatever. We'll have to maybe do two or three different inflation rates or something. I just want people to know how they're getting it stuck up their behind. If it's nothing, that's fine. If it's going to be $8 billion over 20 years, I think people should know. If they want to vote for it, that's why you vote. I mean, for God's sake, right?
Yeah. And Carl put a good note in the chat. Carl, you should jump on and share that as part of the equation.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
All right, so here it is. When I lived in Northwest Florida, before I moved there, quite a good while, the state and other powers that be, including the county powers that be, created an independent board and built a bridge across the Choctahatchee Bay. Okay, now it was a bridge that was arguably quite needed given the development that was going on, condos on the beach and, you know, yada, yada. All right, and that bridge had a toll. Now, this had to be voted upon, and it was, and the bargain was that the tolls would be used to pay down the bonds that were used to construct the bridge, and when those bonds were paid off, the tolls would be lifted. That sounds reasonable, right?
Similar to the Tri-State Tollway.
Similar to the Skyway as well, right?
Yeah, originally. Skyway as well, yeah.
Right. And so
$7 to cross the bridge.
Now. Right. So this was a reasonable proposal. And oh, by the way, the maintenance on this thing could be maintained by the additional property. You know, I mean, there'd have to be some finagling because, you know, it's an independent commission that put the thing up. All right. So, you know. But anyway, your maintenance of infrastructure can be reasonably covered by the increase in number of houses or condos or whatever that get built. But the people who build it should be the ones that finance and pay for the original construction of this new infrastructure, because they're the reason you have to have it in the first place. So this all sounded fine on paper. Now, this toll was originally, and the way that it works in Florida, along with most other places, if you have a including Illinois now, is that you have a transponder, it's cheaper, right, than the cash price. Mm-hmm. All right. So what actually...
If you don't have a transponder, it's more expensive.
You get reamed, right?
Yeah.
Let's word it properly.
Yeah. So here's what actually happens, though. During the 20 years that I lived there, they don't pay the bonds down. Instead, what they do is refinance them a few times and then come up with a project to massively extend this thing by taking the bridge and extending a road all the way over to 85, which is kind of the feeder into the area from Crestview and points north. Now, that road, by the way, was a mess at the time because a lot of the people that worked on the base couldn't afford to live in Fort Walton, so they lived in Crestview, and thus every day at 4 and 5 o'clock, it's a mess. Okay, it's a four lane divided highway. You can't just make that wider, even though there is land to do it, because at the other end in Crestview, there's a town, and in that town, if you can't make that part of it wider, all you do is create a bottleneck, all right, which doesn't help anybody. So anyway, they put this extension in, wildly increased the refinancing size on these bonds. The tolls now have to cover the interest and such on this much larger amount of money. The tolls more than tripled. All right, now, the problem with this is the same problem that you have.
What are the salaries of the authority people? God.
Well, that's the first problem. The second problem, though, is what happens to the people who are, there happens to be a semi-outdoor mall right on the other side of this bridge, on the Destin side, which, by the way, drew an awful lot of hourly workers from high school and college age kids on the other side of the bridge. One of those people was my daughter. Okay. The bridge tolls go from being a quarter of one's hour, 1 hour wage, to being more between both going both directions, to being approximately, including taxes, it now costs you an hour's worth of wage to go over and back.
Sounds like the Chicago Skyway.
Yeah, exactly. So what ends up happening, Chief, is that all those people say, F that, I'm not going to be, and oh, by the way, then Oblamicare comes in, where you've got the fines for employers if you don't have health insurance, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Everybody whacks all of the hours to stay safely under 40 so that they don't have to do that. So now you've got all of these employers over there that are like, there's no way we're going to let you have more than 32 hours in a week, because if somebody calls in sick, we have to be able to ping you and get you to come in, right?
Yeah, and so they really schedule you for 28 so that
exactly. Under 32. So now what ends up happening is you got all these people that they're trying to have come in for 4 hours worth of work, and one of those hours is getting sucked off by the bridge toll.
Well, that's kind of what the theme of the show today, Carl, is that nobody seems to think ahead as to what this stuff's going to do to people.
Oh, no, they just didn't care. Okay, so then what ends up happening is all the people that lived on the other side of the bridge put the middle finger up and refused to go to work for these people. Duh, you're not making anything, right? And now, what is the reaction that we have, these so-called conservatives, what is their answer to this? Their answer to this is to bring in a whole crap ton of J1s to do the jobs.
Well, it creeps up on people.
Again, all predictable, if you game it out, all predictable. And, you know, and the question is, who knows? So when we say it's predictable, I tend to think of most of the government people as just the dupes. You know, they're buying the BS and supporting it. But in the case of the Bears, I have no doubt. I don't know if George McCaskey can game this out, but I know that they have attorneys and accountants who are gaming this out for them, and they know exactly what's going to happen with each one of these.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just a business model at this point. All you have to do is take the numbers that somebody throws at you, plug them in, and say, here's what it's going to look like. And you either say good enough or not good enough. But it's all predictable consequences, and we know it. And so this is where we go back to what Tom said, is can we lay that out for people? And that's not what's happening. So we're not really telling the taxpayers what's going to happen here. And so we're just sitting there saying, I love the Bears. They have Caleb Williams now. They're going to win the Super Bowl.
Well, I think that, can I intercede on one thing?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The inclination is, and this is the part that I'm not Mr. Political or anything like that, but this is the part where we need to almost digress a little bit. When you talk about what's going on in the financing, even as bright as the three of us are, we continue to focus in on the big number and the Bears and the people. Yet, I absolutely convinced with my years in Chicago, that's not the game. The game is the Arlington Park mayor all of a sudden becomes the person who can say, Kevin O'Neill, you've got the security camera contract. Carl,
right.
You're bringing in the portalettes in the parking lot.
Security contract company.
So, I mean, I got wind of this one. You guys know, we live in Chicago. You know where Presidential Towers is?
Yeah.
Well, it's a big, huge thing. It was built. It's a massive apartment complex.
Yeah.
And west of the Loop. And I'm going to say it's four massive buildings. And one of my, Dr. J's dad was one of the original investors in the place. The place never made dough. And my buddy Doc, you know who I'm talking about, not Dr. J, the other Doc, you know what I'm talking about, Kevin.
Yeah.
Just give me the rundown one day. I go, gee, Doc, Dr. J's dad's losing money in this place. He is, but a lot of other people aren't. I go, what are you talking about? And he goes, we know the guy who's got the contract for the four people that are always in the lobby. It's a, what do you call it, the doorman building?
Yeah.
They're doing just fine. The guy who's got the cable, where everybody in the apartment gets a certain amount of cable and you pay up more. He goes, these people have made a fortune for 20 years. They don't give a crap about Dr. J's dad, never did.
Right.
You know,
but the same thing, Chief, is with so many other areas, okay? I mean, you know, it's like we've talked about this thing with coal a few times, right?
Yeah.
With energy, all right? The green screamers are incensed that the TVA, just in the last couple of days, it's just popped up in the local media.
Yep.
TVA's decided they're not shutting their remaining coal plants down. Now, a couple of years ago, they dynamited the stacks at one of their other ones that's not very far from here, Clinch River. They blew them up, so they can't restart that one, okay, because they...
Same thing they did here in Pilsen. They created so much dust that that was a lawsuit.
Yeah, well, I mean, they did the let's stick a bunch of dynamite in this thing and set it off. So, I mean, that one can't be turned back on, but they've still got several that are running. And but what drove TVA's decision was that during this last cold snap, all right, the only reason that you didn't have a million people dark was because they had those plants running. Because the craziness that came out of this was partially the Obama administration and partially before that. But one of the things that's happened with natural gas is that all the pipelines now use electric motors for the compressors along the pipeline to move the gas. Okay.
Why don't they use gas motors?
Chief, they used to.
Okay.
Okay. What they used to do is run a turbine off the gas. Okay.
Yeah.
You're moving
gas along the pipeline anyway. Why not just divert a little to run the pumps?
Well, there seems to be this available fuel right there, right?
Yeah, just a bit.
That incidentally works just fine to run the pump. All right.
And it's fairly low emissions.
Because it mostly makes CO2, right? But part of this was driven by this endangerment finding nonsense. And part of it was also driven by just the general green screamer thing. And the utilities, by the way, were not necessarily, even though they supposedly were opposed, they really kind of weren't. And the reason is an electric motor doesn't require any maintenance, whereas a turbine does. You have to make oil changes to it and, you know, do inspections on the hot sections so it doesn't explode on you, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. A motor either works or it doesn't, all right? So there was some buy-in from the industry. Well, the problem with this is everything, all this sounds fantastic right up until there's an ice storm and the lines that feed power.
You could have a gas generator backup too.
Well, okay, now that costs even more money,
okay,
right? Because now you have the equipment that's not being used 99% of the time, all right? And it's expensive. So the intelligent thing to do is obviously to use the fuel that's sitting right there, because as long as the pipe is in one piece and it has something in it, the pump works. All right, but no, we couldn't do that. So what has, and this happened a few years ago. Remember when Texas had their nasty cold snap?
Oh, yeah,
and
all
their wind turbines froze up, okay? They had the same problem because their windmills froze. There was no power to the pumps, and therefore the gas plants, the gas-fired turbines for power generation that should have been able to cover this, were not available because there was no fuel, okay? Well, TVA, but for their coal-fired power plants, which as long as you have a pile of coal in the parking lot, they work just fine, right? they could care less what the weather looks like. In fact, they're actually a little more efficient because the secondary cooling for the turbines, the outlet temperature, the condenser temperature is lower, so their efficiency actually goes up a little bit. TVA says, we're not shutting those off, because but for that, there would have been about a million people with no electricity in the middle of an ice storm, okay, when it's 5 degrees outside, and people would have frozen to death. And then PJM, which is the interconnect that runs a whole bunch of things, including the Northeast, they had a 4% operating margin during this storm. And 20% of their operating energy during that storm was from coal. Now, if the coal plants had been turned off, which the Biden administration mandated happen by this year, if those plants had been shut down, they would have been short by about 15% against the demand that they had.
Well, somewhere between some stupid decision to shut them all down and maybe an equally stupid decision, we don't care what they pollute, there seems to be some logic someplace in there where people should be able to sit in a room and say...
Yes, but Chief, that doesn't happen.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. That's the whole theme of the show. Why doesn't that happen?
But that doesn't happen. And then, see, the problem that comes along with this is that, you know, so the answer from all the greeny weenies for all this time has always been, well, you know, these kinds of things do happen, you know, weather events and things like that, but they're regional, so it's no big deal because PJM can pull power from TVA.
That's like saying a bunch of people are dead, it's okay if it's not you.
Well, yeah, and so the thing is, but TV in this situation, if PJM had not had the coal plants and had tried to pull power from TVA, TVA didn't have any extra. In fact, they were short, all right? So without the coal plants. So now the answer is people die in size.
Oh, yeah.
And TVA has said, no. Okay. And by the way, empowered by the fact that the Trump administration, you know, I bag on people when they do dumb things. I say you did a smart thing when you do a smart thing. Backed by the fact that the Trump administration has you know, removed those EOs, and now they've announced yesterday they went through the formal rulemaking process, everything else. So this is going to be very hard to lift. They've now killed that endangerment finding, which was a complete load of crap, which Obama rammed through, all right, and which by the way, everyone's talking about that being, you know, like start stop on cars. Right, the automated, you know, your engine turns off at red lights and things like this. Here's the thing, that's actually a rig that the car manufacturers put in that doesn't actually reduce emissions, but it changes the balance of the calculation that is used for those emission calculations.
And it burns out your starter.
Well, it's also very rough on the starter and the battery, right? But in addition to that, the reality of a combustion engine is that, especially at a red light, is that when a combustion engine starts, there is a burst of period of time that you have to run a richer than stoichiometric mixture to start it. Okay, so when you pull up to a red light and the engine turns off, the emission reduction from the engine being off for the 30 seconds while you're at the light is actually more than offset by the emissions that are created by the restart. All right.
Let's get back to the coal thing. Now, in this area, and I'm just a dummy looking at this stuff, the one in Pilsen that just came down, 110 years old, had something there that was, I'm going to say, an architectural highlight that maybe only you know, Carl. The plant was so big when it was put up that the flywheel, General Commonwealth Edison said they couldn't make the flywheel. And the guy from, what was his name, Sam Insull, who was the kind of insulting guy who ran Commonwealth Edison, he said, well, we'll make it anywhere. Though. The reason why Commonwealth Edison said it could be made, it was so big that the external part of it, the furthest edge, actually was going to exceed the sound barrier.
Yeah.
And he thought it would fly apart. Anyway, that place in the middle of a neighborhood, I don't know how you fix it, Carl. No, the place in, or can you fix it? Now, there's one right on the border, Illinois and Indiana, not really near a whole lot of houses, right near the lake where there's a lot of water.
Right.
Then there's one in Michigan City that is relatively new. I mean, I'm saying 25, 30 years. It looks like it's water scrubbed. Never see any bad crap coming out of there, and it's coal. Now, I'm going to say I don't think you could save the one in Pilsen. You might. What does a new one look like? Why can't people get in a room and say, and Democrats and Republicans, they actually can believe on, can agree on something like this? Really, there's enough decent people on both sides. Okay, look, here's our new spots where we're going to keep people healthy. We've got 200 coal plants, 50 of them meet the standard right now. 50 of them can get there. Another 50 maybe can get there. 50 need to be turned off. And by the way, if we build 50 new ones, this is what they're going to look like. Why isn't that the answer? To me, that's so easy, it's scary.
Chief, the reason it isn't the answer is because what you just heard out of the Sierra Club, which needs to be nuked to the orbit of Mars and needed to be 25 years ago, which is that the second that you put any kind of combustion, anything, in permanent infrastructure, they sue, they obstruct, they do whatever, you know, they're marching out in front of the site, they're lobbying, this and that, they're, oh, you're killing babies, you bastard. And the result of it is that the cost is three times whatever the actual engineering cost is of the plant, okay? And therefore, it never makes any money, and it gets and the project gets abandoned. And the point isn't to resolve the legitimate issues. The point is to destroy the American economy.
Well, it's I don't know if that's the point. The point is they...
No, it is the point, Chief, because here's the thing. If they actually cared about the planet, if the planet actually mattered to any of these people, I don't care who they are, Greenpeace, all these guys, if that was the point, then until India, China, South Africa, all these other places that are putting up coal-fired power plants by the thousands, they would not say a word about America until every one of those nations was either in compliance or they were 100% embargoed by the Western world.
But who made... I'm not defending anybody here, but
I'm just saying, the last time I checked, Chief, there's only one atmosphere.
Okay? I'm not going to defend the Sierra Club, but look at the history of this thing in Pilsen, which was a marvel at one point.
Yeah.
And the Commonwealth Edison's line of bullshit through the years, if it was still okay, there was no pollution, there was none of this. Fact is, they lied forever. That's the reason why you have Sierra Clubs.
Okay, and you know what? The fact of the matter is that the medical system for 40 years told us that smoking was good for you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Now that's as stupid as it gets, right? And yet that's what it was.
So I mean, it's not like you can believe even.
Your
former girlfriend Sarah Palin.
Oh yeah, right.
She was hot.
Okay, that doesn't make her my girlfriend.
Her story with the every time she dealt with the oil companies, all she thought she was dealing with a bunch of crooks. You couldn't believe anything they said.
Go figure. Yeah. Right. So here is my what I have pointed out forever, because it's been true in every line of business I've ever been involved in, whether I was an executive running a company, whether I was a mope. Making a wage, right, sitting in a cube or whatever, was always the same answer, which is that 80% of any problem you want to solve is resolvable for almost no cost.
All right, the last
20, for each extra percent you want to resolve, the cost goes vertical, and right, it's exponentially more expensive.
If is anybody building a new coal plant here? If you did and you wanted to make it as healthy as you could, what would it look like? Where would it have to be?
Chief, stop. Okay?
Okay.
As healthy as you could is
at least unhealthy.
Okay, wait a minute. As healthy as you could, you just use the exact language that the Sierra Club uses.
I'm not looking for perfection.
And that Obama used, and Biden used. It is exactly the reason that all those plants were ordered shut down. Because I can do something technically that is so cost prohibitive that nobody can do it. And that is exactly what was going on
I'm not trying to go down that road. I'm saying, reasonable people looked at it, what would it look like?
All right, well, I'll tell you what it would look like.
The one in Michigan City? I'm guessing probably
It would look a lot like the one in Michigan City. So here's the thing. A basic scrubber, all right, which on a coal-fired power plant, it uses water, which is why you see a huge plume of steam coming out of the thing. But in addition, they use some lime. All right. That's the most common chemical, but there's a couple others. And the reason is that you're not just trying to get the particulates out of the stream. You're trying to get the sulfur dioxide out, which is actually, that's the acid rain thing, right? That is real. All right. So you're trying to get that out. But at the same time, because you are condensing the water, you get a lot of the particulate matter. What you get out of the bottom of that thing when you're done is gypsum, which, of course, is what's used to make wallboard. Okay? So this is actually a good thing in that you get something you can sell out of the bottom of the scrubber, which offsets some of the cost to run it. All right? Now, that in general is a good thing. That kind of a setup gets somewhere around 80 to 90% of the particulate matter and the sulfur dioxide out of the exhaust stream.
What was the deal with the place in Illinois where they're going to put the sulfur dioxide underground or something?
That stuff's all garbage.
Okay? Yeah, that was never built. That was a story.
No, and the reason, Chief, is that that last... If you're not satisfied with that, and you demand the last 20% all come out, now the cost is so high that the plant doesn't get built.
All right, what you just said, does that get you somewhere near natural gas or no?
Coal, even with the scrubber, is going to be... It's going to emit more than natural gas does because natural gas is just CH4. It's carbon and hydrogen. Okay, that's all it is. So when you burn natural gas, you get carbon dioxide and water because water goes in. Now you get some nitrogen oxides, which are fairly nasty because of the temperature. All right, same thing with exhaust recirculation and management of combustion temperatures in cars. Nitrogen oxides are smog producers. All right, but there's tension here because the higher the combustion temperature, the more nitrogen oxide you make. And that is, of course, the higher the temperature of combustion, the more efficient the engine is. So there is a tension here between efficiency and production of NOx, which, that one, by the way, can't be removed by catalysts easily either. So there really is a tension here between cost of moving whatever it is, whether it's making electrical power, moving a vehicle, whatever have you, and this level of pollution. And this, that's a real thing, okay? There is a balance. But you can do that and run it. And with coal, that's not nearly as much of a factor because coal doesn't burn as high a temperature as does natural gas.
Well, it sounds like you can't put a coal plant in the middle of a city like they used to.
Well, you can, because again, look, if you take that old plant that didn't have any of those controls on it, right? You tore it down or refurbished it. You could retrofit that plant, I suspect, and get an 80% reduction in.
Well, that was the thing. Somehow, this is why you got to be careful when you say anything nice about these utilities, because, and I don't say you did, but Commonwealth Edison was the reason for the Public Utility Holding Company Act. I mean, this is one of those stacks that was like 200 feet in the air. The stack was a work of art, by the way. I mean, I can't. What is it? You know what? Pullman Swindell. That's what they did. Is they made stacks, built. Don't just call it a chimney. There's a bunch of guys who go out there and put it together. That's a big deal, putting those stacks up there, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the thing is this, is that now, if you were going to do that retrofit, I don't think you can do that with the existing stack.
Well, you see, okay. What they did, Karen, I knew the...
But this was... So here's the...
But
here's
they,
the
sold, thing. They sold those... This is how sneaky they were. They somehow sold those off to somebody.
Yeah. And, no, I know. There's all kinds
of... And then when it came time for this, they must have known that this retrofit money was coming down the line, and then the new company didn't... Somehow or another, they screwed the new company. They didn't get screwed themselves, I think.
Chief, there's all kinds of BS games that go on with collusion between, you know, this guy and that guy, and you know, one hand and the other, and all this. That's as old as the sun, right?
But these guys have their finger in the pocket of these committees and what's going on in government. Well, so it's unsurprised the day they sell it, all of a sudden the new guy can't operate it.
Can't operate, right, exactly. I mean, that's nothing new either. But there was one of these plants near where I grew up, okay, coal-fired power plant. And they did the first set of retrofits, okay? And so there was a new stack that was put up, and they reconfigured the boilers and such to be able to use it. There were two of the older ones, I think, that they couldn't reasonably reconnect and use. So for the most part, those sat idle. But the primary part of that plant operated for a very long time after that stuff was put in. And then when the Biden administration comes in with their stuff after the Obama administration, these guys, I mean, basically the plant got shut down. Now, the problem with this is that what they didn't shut down, so what they have still over there is a bunch of natural gas peaking turbines that you have to know what you're looking for to see them, but they're there. And those are still there and able to provide, you know, peaking power, whatever have you. But as a result of this, the grid resiliency has been destroyed in that area. Because if you had a transmission failure into that part of the state, that plant that it was operating meant that that immediate region had electricity. Okay, the area where I grew up had power.
Well, the reliability of the downtown area is horrible compared to when it was in the Pilsen and the Crawford.
And that's the reason, Chief, is that if something goes wrong with the interconnects and the grid gets fragmented, there's enough electricity available from local generation to keep most of the people online. Okay, now not everybody. There's going to be some curtailment, but in the general sense, the system is more reliable. And here's the other part of that. If that plant's running, it is available as a resynchronization source. So when the grid comes back up, you have power there. You can restart other things from that, because most plants, the exception is gas turbines, those can be black started. You can start those without a grid reference. But a coal plant requires a huge amount of energy, huge amount of electrical power in order to run the pulverizers.
Oh, you're too young. You don't remember being in a school at 5 in the morning when the fireman is firing up the coal. I was in a couple of schools that were coal fired when I was young.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But how do you do it?
Well,
Tom, did you have the shovel out and you had to shovel into
there
the...
There you go. You had to shovel it in.
I will say this. No, that was the fireman's job, but...
Yeah, the thing is, on those large plants, same thing with nuclear, okay? A nuclear plant requires approximately 10% of its nameplate rating in order to come online under normal conditions. So that means if it produces a gigawatt out the butt end, it needs 100 megawatts of power from the grid to start. And the reason is because the pumps and other things that use a lot of energy, the condensers and everything else, they have to be up to speed before you take the plant critical. If not, it explodes.
Oh yeah.
Now if you put me in a position where I had to black start one of those things, or, you know, hell or high water, I had to do it, I could probably figure out a way, but there would be a non-zero chance it would blow up in my face. So the normal operating procedure is that, you know, you have to have that outside energy. So that means the grid has to be there. So if there is a failure, a nuclear plant cannot start on its own power, on its own emergency generators. There's not enough electrical power available to do it. And the same thing's true with most large modern coal plants, because they run what's called a fluid bed for combustion. And the pulverizers that turn the coal into dust to run on that use a ridiculous amount of electrical energy, and they have to be running in order to be able to light the thing.
You started it with... paper, kindling, wood, a little bit of coal.
You're not doing that with a modern coal-fired power plant, okay?
Because it takes forever to get up to... You need the steam pressure is what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, and here's the other thing. The thermal mass of that thing, just the amount of metal that's there, is so large that they cannot load follow rapidly either. So if you all of a sudden, you're running at 40% of your output and all of a sudden you need 100, it may take 6 to 8 hours for that plant to come up to full output. And there's nothing you can do about it. Same thing's true for nuclear, by the way.
The big locomotive, they run around Big Boy every once in a while, they go by.
Yeah.
It takes a day from cold.
Yeah, it takes it takes a day to cold start.
Yeah.
And the same thing's true. You cannot load follow with these base load plants, these coal-fired plants. But without those, and without something that is absolutely reliable, then whenever there is a surge in demand for some reason, weather, whatever have you, you are going to have people with no electrical power at all. And that's just the facts. And by the way, renewables cannot provide that reliability, because at 2 o'clock in the morning in February, there is no sun, ever.
No, neither at 4, because that's when I used to go to the schools.
But guess what? When it's dark outside, how much does a solar panel produce?
Well, you know what the beauty of it is? That when you start it up, the dirtiest part is when it's cold. And if it was in dark, nobody cared about the smoke. So the idea
That's true for these other plants, too. Is that it's just like a car, okay? You know, the Mazda that I have does some really tricky stuff on a cold start in order to get the catalyst lit off almost immediately. It sounds like somebody's got a...
Don't tell me you got a Wankel engine.
No, it's actually the computer that's in there is very tricky. It runs this valve overlap between the intake and exhaust, and deliberately throws unburned fuel down the exhaust pipe to light the cat that's at the top, for only for about 30 seconds or so. But it does it on purpose, because once the catalyst lights off, then the emissions go to very close to zero.
All right, hey, okay? We had 10 minutes before the CPI comes out. We're going to market was in the crap hole yesterday, and now it's down again today. It's down 21, down 109. Yep. Some stocks are taking big hits, others not. For some reason, everybody loved Walmart, loved Home Depot. I don't quite get where everybody's going to... It looks like we're going to Walmart, we're going to McDonald's, and we're going to Dollar General. Other than that, everything's in the crap hole.
Other than that, everything sucks, right?
Yeah. What do you make of this? I mean, we've got Bitcoin has come back, still not down anywhere near the 60 it was last week. It's about 66. So it's down from the 70, which whoever saved it and brought it back up got it from. But it's not really the issue. Gold got hammered yesterday. It's back all today. Silver got absolutely hammered. It's back all today. What do you make of something like yesterday? We had a pretty good 30-year auction from what they claim. I didn't really get the catalyst of yesterday, did you? I mean,
I sort of did, because the thing with yesterday is just a follow-on with what we had prior, which was that everybody was all rah-rah-rah about the jobs report that came out, right? The truth of the matter is that the jobs report was punky. And apparently, it took the people in the market a little while to figure that out. It's like it's not that it was a bad report; it wasn't horrid. And as a result, you can't turn around and say. And of course, you know how the market works on this, Chief, because you and I have been running around this thing long enough. Oh, there's going to be rate cuts. No, not from that. Then you read inside there, and we talked about this when, I was on the air. I'm like, wait a minute, where are all these people that supposedly were deported? Well, then, as it turns out, there's a footnote in the report that I missed when we were on the air. Okay, my bad, I missed it. That said, oh, by the way, the normal January non-institutional population adjustment isn't in this report. It's going to be in the next one.
Really?
So they gave us all the data except the most important number that I was expecting. And oh, by the way,
where did the huge adjustment come from in there?
It wasn't in there. That's what I pointed out, was that my assumption, I mean, if that was...
But there was a $600,000 bulge in the month before.
Okay, but the point being that number, there is no... If you look across that table, there is no difference between the unadjusted and the adjusted numbers for that number only.
Okay.
Okay, for that top line number. That's because that is a guess... For 11 months out of the year, and in January of every year, the BLS uses the ACS to rebase that figure. Okay, that's the way it's been now for decades. All of a sudden, because of this shutdown, no, not going to happen this time. It's going to be in next month. So not only is this, not only do we not know whether or not what appeared to be the case, which is Trump didn't actually throw all these people out of the country. After the uncorrelated data set said Biden did let them all in. Not only do we not know if that's true, but in addition to that, that three tick drop in the employment population ratio may be complete crap, all right, because we don't know, because that top line number's not adjusted as it's supposed to be. But more importantly, for the next couple of years, my work on this is going to be screwed, because that's going to come in February this time instead of January, but only once. So now there's a dislocation in the data that didn't have to be there. We can produce every single other thing in the report except this one number, which happens to be one of the most important elements in every January.
The adjusted numbers show pushing 450,000 people hired. That's not including this number?
No, it's wrong, because because the top line number's off. Well, and the problem.
Well, then what's the point of these numbers? Is what?
Well, Chief, exactly. And the thing is this, though, is that every January, I warn people that you cannot, the ratio numbers for January are always skewed, because that is when this adjustment is made every year. Okay, it happens every single year. And so, therefore, January is not you cannot take that as a gospel number in regards to anything. It just isn't, because, you know, that's just how it is. You have to fix your accumulated error once a year, and they do, and they do it in January. Now it's going to be next month for this year.
Is next month supposedly on time?
Supposedly, yeah. So, I mean, you know, who knows?
Which would be like 2 weeks, right?
Well,
2.5 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to get it, you know, first, allegedly, the first week, the first Friday of March, right?
Which is 3 weeks from today.
Well, yeah, which is, you know, so like, you know, 3 weeks we're supposed to get this. But this basically, this is going to be impossible for me or anyone else to accurately run on a forward basis for the next year or two. We're going to be making guesses with a bias and an error band that are three times the size of what they normally are, especially given the fact that the expectation that I have and everybody else is that because of the, whether the departures are voluntary or you know, forced back over the border one way or another, that this number is going to materially be changed. And now all of a sudden, I mean, it'd be one thing if I wasn't, you know, if nobody was expecting this kind of thing, if there hadn't been a change in, you know, in policy, but there was a change in policy.
What ended up with the change in the birth and death? That we didn't have a chance to go through that. Where did that show up, or did it?
Well, it supposedly is in there, but is it meaningful? That's a black box.
This is not birth and death of people. It's birth and death of companies.
Of businesses.
Yeah.
Right. But Chief, that's always been a black box knob. It's the reason I've called this the Bureau of Lies and Scams for 30 years.
When they tell you the thing that has no detail to it changes to something else that has no detail to it, what does that get you?
Well, the same thing the deflator gets you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
by the way, we've changed the deflator from what to what? We can't tell you.
Well, we can't. By the way, you can't see either of the sets of formulas. Right. Yeah. You know, thanks a lot, guys.
You should see how I painted your room. Well, can I see it now?
You know what I'll tell you, after all these years and the fact that we've never gotten either of those in an actual mathematical formula with the inputs, right, so you can actually go verify that they're real, my suspicion is that both of those figures are some guy in a room who's supposedly a PhD, he's got a PhD in economics, and he's sitting in a room and he's looking at it going, well, I think it ought to be this.
Before Kevin explodes at us, where does Wikipedia get their detail on the deflator? Because they have some.
You have to be very careful believing anything that comes out of it.
I understand that, but they must get it from someplace.
Well, somebody, Wikipedia, at least allegedly, can be edited by anybody, with or without facts, all right? And people can challenge it or change it back or whatever have you. And if you get into a shout fest of sorts with people doing that, then they'll lock it and then make a determination who they're going to believe and who they're not, and forbid, you know, the non-trusted people from making any further edits. I had a fight with those guys a number of years ago and basically told them that you will take this down. There's a bunch of stuff that I consider to be rather defamatory. I said, you will either take this down or you're going to get sued, and by the way, you're going to prohibit people from changing it again. And they did. So, and that, you know, milquetoasted and took a bunch of detail out at the same time, but that's the, you know, I don't care if you take a bunch of other stuff out. What I care about is that you don't publish stuff that's a lie.
Okay, no, I guess, you know, whatever. You and Kevin are...
Well, if I can prove it's a lie, then it's a lie. Okay, but
they somehow are claiming they get... We're going to go to break here early, but...
Yeah.
Let's talk about this after, because they have a chart here.
I know.
No, is it total BS, or they claim their source is the government?
Chief, I have no idea if it's total BS. I can't validate it.
I can't either. I just wonder if they actually did find the spot. It's limited, but
Chief, if it was real, why wouldn't it be in the actual report?
The PCE is supposed to be an inflation gauge. It's closer to what really is than where the CPI has grown. Now, there's a chart here on Wiki where they talk about housing, and they say that the CPI is 42% housing, the PCE is 26%. But then there's an adjusted column here. 32.9. But here's the weird part. This goes to what you and I are always talking about. Medical care in a CPI is 6.2%.
Right.
Allegedly, according to these guys, the PCE is at 22.3%, which is exactly where you and I would put it. Right?
That's roughly what it is as a percentage of GDP. However,
the PCE remember, adjusted is 5%. It's lower than the CPI. So
right.
where did PCE come from, and who did the adjustment? We're going to do a real quick traffic weather because it's all going to move after these numbers come out.
Yep.
They'll be right back. SP futures down 13. NASDAQ futures down 77. Real quick, Ricky.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. We're going to buzz through this real quick because we've got these numbers either out or coming out. S&P futures, they're now up 5, so they must be out. NASDAQ futures up 4. They were down a whole bunch, so I'm thinking this number is halfway decent. So let's just go right back to Carl and talk about these numbers. I'm looking at the... what do you got, Carl?
Well, I don't because my... here it is. Here it is. All right, just popped out. 02 for the month. Says all items before seasonal adjustment up to 4 annualized, and shelter, gee, go figure, was the largest factor. Food index up 0.2, gee, as did food at home, duh, and they said that the index for energy fell 1.5. I don't know that I buy that one. But I need to look at that a little bit internally because I'm not sure where you get the energy decrease. You certainly didn't get it in electrical power and natural gas, right, with the cold snap.
Gas was down.
Well, natural gas...
I mean, gasoline was down.
Gasoline was... And you know what, though? There's a lot of... gasoline says minus 3.2 over the month. I'm not so sure that...
That's probably the number. That's the number here.
Well, okay, so there was a lot of regional stuff that somebody was ignoring because I was up skiing up north as one of those storms was coming through, and overnight there was almost a dollar increase in gas. Now, how in the H did that not show up in the numbers? But it was local because when I came back down here to Tennessee, it wasn't up at all. So that's kind of weird, right? I mean, you know, I don't know about that. Now, electricity, however, how would you like a data center for breakfast? Electricity over 12 months up 6.3%. That's kind of a problem,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
How come Anthropic and these other guys get to bill me for the power to run their data center?
And the weird part is they keep charging you for the, especially with natural gas, keep charging you for the delivery charge. But here's... the numbers here, and again, I'm not...
I don't think there's anything in this. I mean, the headline doesn't tell me anything about there's interest rate changes that are coming, okay? Now, that doesn't mean the market may not take it that way, but, and again, I haven't read through the entire table yet. I'm just working off this,
let's focus on the top line.
Yeah, the top line is still above target, so why would you be dropping rates?
All right, so the... The number that, please don't take this wrong, the way of looking at this that you've been talked into thinking over the last two or three presidencies are you're supposed to look at this year-over-year number.
Right.
And I'm going to use the term, I don't want to get this harsh, but you've been friggin' brainwashed. That number is useless. Now, this month...
Absolutely.
This month, the December to January unadjusted percent... is 0.4%. Somehow or another, somebody in the White House or some other damn place somewhere along the chain adjusted that number down to 0.2.
Right.
Okay, now in my day, 0.2 times 12 is 2.4, okay?
Well, no, because it's compounded. It's actually 1.0243, but yeah.
Okay, but 0.4% per month
is not.
Times 12 is more like 4.8 or higher if you compound it.
4.91, yeah.
Okay, so that's a number. Now, a couple of months, I will say this, the adjustment somehow makes the unadjusted lower, which I don't get. But I just, I don't know, Carol, I'm too much into the detail. I was like this before, and then you really wrecked me.
Thank you.
But, I mean, some poor bastard, boy, I'm going to use the wrong words here this morning, goes out and does a thing, meats, poultry, fish, and eggs.
Right.
And goes out there and says, okay, they're down 0.1%. Somebody on some desk between there and the gold-gilted Oval Office now, somebody says, nah, it's not minus 0.1, it's positive 0.2.
No, actually, it's neg 0.2 on the adjustment.
Meat, poultry, fish, and eggs?
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong column. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, so, I mean, sit there and go, you pay all these people to do this. Now, here we have fuel oil.
Right.
This should be somewhat of a sample company, right? It should be the same one every month.
That one's kind of easy, right?
Well, it's down 3.4 unadjusted.
Right.
Down 5.7 adjusted.
Yeah, yeah. Would you mind telling me where it was neg 5? By the way, fuel oil is also known as heating oil.
But, I mean, I want to know the person who did this, and the reason why I always bring this up is one of the guests on the show, a good friend of mine, Mike Murphy, our Army guy, his mom actually used to do this.
Yeah.
In Cleveland. And I think he told me she was like noodles and rice or something. I don't know. But it could, whatever it was. I know Murph's mom was the honest lady on earth. I guarantee you, she's not walking into the jewel going, wow, price is 79 cents. I'll make that 82. I don't think she did that. So no, I'm curious, what desk makes this move?
Well, probably the one that is has a underground passage to the Oval Office.
But they're not always that way.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it's the same argument that, you know, that supposedly Wikipedia has this deflator thing, you know, has a tap on this. If in fact those claims are true, all right, then tell me why it's not in the CPI report. Why is not the actual methodology and the data sources? Why can't I go onto the BLS's webpage? All right, because
you know, this thing is amazingly detailed.
Well, I understand that.
You go down to 8 different brands of rice if you want to dig deep enough.
Oh, yeah. But here's the thing. The BLS, you know, if you go online, now this is one of the things that the internet has done, because back before, all this stuff was in an online format. What you had was this printed, I mean, now it's in a PDF, but it was, you know, it was a paper copy, right, that was originally made up and typed up. The thing is that today I can go into the BLS's website or for GDP, you've got the ones that's done by the BEA and all this. I can go in there and I can pull down data sets and extractions. Same thing with the Fed, with the Z1. I can pull all those data sets down and as Excel files or, you know, whatever format I want them in. And you would think that because all of that is there, that the methodology, the actual mathematical formula, if I pulled down this report, the mathematical formula for the seasonal adjustment would be in that cell, right?
Yep.
We take the unadjusted number, here's the mathematical formula, this is where the seasonal adjusted number is, and it's a bunch of references to other things, I'm sure, but you take the input number, you multiply it by this formula, you run it through this formula, and you get the output number. No. That is not the case. And it doesn't matter which one of these government numbers you look at. This is why I call them the Bureau of Lies and Scams, and why I always work on the employment report, I always work off the unadjusted, because I can't get the data source. I can't actually check their math.
Well, I want to know who this guy's data source is, because everybody knows to my chagrin, everybody has a habit that they wish they didn't have.
Right.
I can't help but check out whenever I have a free half hour or so, the price of used pickup trucks. I don't know why. I've gone across the country four or five times to pick one up, and I don't know, it's just kind of a... I always go to a place that I've never driven back from before, Carl, so it's part of that. You know, it's part of that, just going somewhere and meeting somebody and talking to some people and having dinner with a couple of people on the way back. I don't know, it's just something I used to do and hopefully will do again. Is anybody... Now, maybe the cost of Lex or Elon Musk things that nobody wants might be... They have the cost of used cars and trucks...
Yeah.
Year over year is down 2%. I'm going to tell you, if it's not up 10%, I'll take a jump in Lake Michigan when it's frozen. I mean, I'm telling you.
There's so much of this though, Chief, that you look at. I mean, yeah, it's like the whole energy commodities thing, the fuel oil one. All of a sudden, you know, oh well, it was down a little, but let's make it down twice that, right, or close to twice that. Yeah, you got some of these others. Gasoline, okay. The unadjusted number is -2.5. The adjusted one's -3.2.
Yeah.
What? Unleaded regular. The unadjusted's 2.6. The adjusted's -3.4. I mean, what? And they actually break these out: mid grade and premium, and then other motor fuels. And by the way, other motor fuels, which I assume is probably like E85, right? You know, all ethanol laced stuff. -3.6 both adjusted and unadjusted. Here's the one that really, really chaps my butt. So electricity on the month, unadjusted number +1.6. That's a big jump.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. Guess what the adjusted number is.
Don't know.
-0.1.
Wow, that's... Well, yeah, but I think
somebody's lying a little.
Well, the detail. I mean, again, we flash back and forth on subjects.
But wait a minute, Chief. Don't you pay a bill?
Yeah,
based on the unadjusted number.
It's incredibly more expensive, virtually every month. And the gas is... I don't want to open up this gas bill, but let me just zero in on the used trucks again for a little bit. For those that are listening or one percenters or whatever, you might not even know what the hell I'm talking about, but there's the cost of new cars that is going up. Well, whether or not it's going up this year versus last year, I don't know, but the bubble created by COVID and a lot of the regulations, I think, that came into the Biden administration, the new cars are prohibitively expensive. I mean, I don't know of any young person who comes close to being able to buy one unless daddy buys it for them. So then you've got the first wave of stuff that's 3, 4, 5 years old. And a lot of the new vehicles that I was actually talking about last week a little bit, I don't want to go through it, especially the new trucks, 5 and 6 years old, you couldn't give me one of them.
Right.
Because they're all the new 10-speed transmissions and
all
stuff. It's
all garbage.
It's all total garbage. So if you go back to something in, I'm going to say, like the late 90s to 2008 or so, which were still somewhat unencumbered by this, I dare you to find one at a decent price. I bought
forget about it.
I bought a 99 basic 3/4-ton Chevy pick-me-up one, and when my parents died, I was cleaning out the house and everything. And plus, I wanted to drive Route 66 back, and I paid $3,500 for it.
Yeah,
I would say if you can find something like that with more mileage on it, if you can get something drivable for under 10 or 11 or 12, good luck. My truck, again, I drive to work in the city through the salt, so I don't want something crazy. If we want to,
it's going
to
get destroyed by the salt anyway.
If we're going to drive something nice, we drive Audrey's car, that kind of thing. But my truck cost me $10,300. It's 2 years now.
Right.
And I put, 20,000 miles on it maybe.
Yeah.
Carl, if I didn't get 15 for it, I couldn't begin to duplicate it.
Right, I know.
And yet, it's nowhere near 15. I mean, it needs to be worth like 7 or something.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, it's had 2 years of getting salted every
year. Yeah, oh yeah, but I'm saying...
You drove it in the winter, too.
I mean, it's crazy. And you go to a dealership, they're going to give you like the blue book traded, which might be like 5. Try and duplicate it. If you can duplicate it for 15... whatever. My hat's off to you. You can't come close.
Well, that was what, you know, that's, yeah, and by the way, this gets really messy if you wreck it, and then you have to deal with the insurance company on the value, right?
Well, that's so, what I found some guy with a really nice, I don't know what it was, 2000, but it was, you know, it was pretty cheery. It was down south and everything. The guy wants like $15,000 for it, and I go, you know, I'm not going to say, given what my friend Carl and I talk about, I'm not going to say it's not worth 15. But I can't drive it home, and if somebody runs into me, the insurance company tell me it's worth $3,000. I can't do that.
Right, I can't do that. Right, exactly. And like some of the numbers that are in here, like, you know, here's another one. Okay, so, you know, new cars, unadjusted 06, all the adjusted numbers 05. Where'd you get that one from?
Yeah.
New trucks 03, adjusted 01. So let's lie to people about what the actual price on the sticker of the car is, right? I mean, you cannot say that there should be an adjustment on an actual paid price. Now, I don't care about we're not talking about year over year, because January comes the same month, you know, comes after Christmas every year, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, 12-month basis, it is what it is. But the idea of trying to flatten these things by knob twisting is garbage. And this sort of thing, which is what we always end up with people reporting and, you know, trying to make so-called investment decisions and all this stuff, it is just hot garbage. And it's the reason years back when I was running MCS, I identified that it's absolutely unusable in a business planning context, which is why I started using all the unadjusted numbers. And if I wanted a 12-month trend, I just used them from 12 months back.
Well, you know,
Christmas was the same time every year.
Well, you mentioned it, and we talk about the politicians of today and how somehow or another, whatever you want to call it. I've said this before. When I was doing the stuff for Pullman, back when we had, you know, a lot of inflation, 12%, the number came out from the government, well, January is 1%. Okay, we had a $60 million contract with Boston. I'd call my guy up and I go, 1% looks like you owe us $60 million in 60.
Right.
Looks that way to me. It was a 30-second phone call when I went out there. We always had a drink. The thought never was him saying, God, this government sucks. The number's really only a half. We're not giving you one.
Right. We're not giving it to you. Yeah. Right.
I mean, now, either one of us, we maybe could have, you know, had a bocce ball game about, was it really 0.9 or 1.1? But the thought that we were getting hosed by like a full percent or something, or never crossed anybody's mind. The numbers pretty much matched what you saw.
Well, that's because they did, right?
I will say this, though, Carl. No matter what, even back then, there was a lag to it that I could never understand.
Well, of course, yeah, there was, but the thing is that if I looked at something, you know, when I was a young Ute, right, but I was, of course, you know, I grew up in the middle of that crap, right, in the 1970s and early 1980s, going from being a teenager to being someone who had to go out and make enough money to survive, and I saw all of this with my own eyeballs. And when those numbers came out, you know, I'd eyeball it and look at it and go, my food bill went up about that much.
Yeah.
You know, so it was an exact no, but it was close enough that I didn't turn around and immediately say, oh, bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, but now every single month it comes out, that's what I end up doing.
Well, this owner's equivalent rent, 3.3% up on the year.
Yeah.
What is the average insurance up?
Well, see, they don't count. That's separate.
Oh,
that's
no, it's got to be in there.
No, it's
not.
Tenants and household insurance, okay, is supposedly.
I'm not talking about tenants and household would be renter's insurance, wouldn't it be?
And household. No. And household.
And household.
And household, not or.
Are taxes nowhere?
Taxes are not in here at all. They don't exist. Taxes are not real.
Right. So what do you suppose if you're in one of these areas in the city? Well, I don't know if the house prices went up after taxes.
Well, by the way, lodging away from home, unadjusted up 2.7, adjusted -0.1. I can tell you right now, I haven't seen a neg anything in renting a hotel room in the last how many years?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I don't know what to do. I have a, my table here that I get from these guys is an abbreviated version. I don't get the full one anymore. I get the...
Go to the PDF file. Let me pull the PDF file. It's all still there.
Because I got a consumer price index for all urban consumers that you're looking at?
Yeah, what you do is if you go down towards the bottom, there's a thing that says there's like a checkbox, a click box on the side that's PDF. Click that one and you'll get the PDF file.
Oh, okay, because this one's a little bit truncated, but...
Yeah.
Still, most of the stuff they got. Motor vehicle maintenance up 4.9%. Medical care services up 3.9%. They got hospital up 6.6%.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other interesting thing is hospital services was 0.9 on the month unadjusted, and believe it or not, the adjusted number is exactly the same. Big shock.
Yeah.
Somebody didn't knob twist that one. Yeah.
I don't. So the parts that we if we had to point to two places.
But by the way, they say health insurance is down. Go talk to the people that have Obamacare.
Yeah, how can it be down for anybody?
Well, it's a triple if you had your subsidy disappear.
Well, the two things that here that I would bitch at totally, if somebody was saying.
By the way, they also say it's 0.89% of a budget.
Well, you've got 6.9% is your medical care services, which is...
Yeah, no, I know. It's total garbage.
Yeah, and...
It's hot garbage, yeah. Including the health insurance.
And owner's equivalent rent is 26%.
Yeah.
Well... Shelter's 35 total, so...
Well, that one's actually somewhat reasonable.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, more in some cases, less in others. But, you know, the higher your income bracket, the lower that number probably is.
Explain to me this. The shelter number is 35.
Right.
They've got rent of primary residence 7.8 and owner's equivalent rent 26. But you're either in one or two of those categories. So it's 35, right?
Right. It's the total spend. So it's total spend, right? Across the economy, which is where that weight comes from, but you know, it's 35, but if you're a renter, it's in rent, it's in the utilities, you know, it's in your insurance or whatever have you, but if you're an owner, then it's the other. The thing is that there's part of the problem with the rent thing. Is that there's an imputed component in there that isn't in these numbers.
Well, okay? They're not alleging that your rent is 7.8% of your paycheck. No way.
Which is a load of crap.
Yeah, there's no way. They're not alleging that. It's still going to be 35, right?
Well, they're looking across the economy.
Yeah, right.
Right. But the weighting in the economy is 7.8.
Right.
Because because that's the differential between the two is 60% of people are in a house they quote unquote own.
Okay.
That's kind of how it because these are weights across the economy, not weights across individuals.
All right. So the market was way down. It came up, and now we're like dead flat.
Yeah.
What's tradable? Market's too expensive. Why do you? What's kind of surprising is. And when it comes to technical fields, compared to you and Kevin, I'm the uninformed. But when you talk about tech, you name seven or eight stocks.
Right.
I've never seen in my lifetime of watching this for people, the last seemingly month to 6 weeks, it's seemingly like two or three stocks within the seven that we all consider tech, well, even though foolishly consider tech, way up. And the other one's way down. I mean, I would never have guessed that the Oracle and the Micron would have a 400-point differentiation in 2 months. I mean, to me, I know they're different companies, but right. Most people would lump them as one of the top 10 tech companies, right, or something like that.
Right, right.
Yet, the dramatic, Microsoft has been on its ass for the last 3 weeks, and yet some of the other stuff's gone straight up. I mean, you can't keep Micron down. I mean... what's going on here? Is this AI driven? Somebody's in it, somebody's not.
What's driven is things that are supposed to get you thrown in prison. Okay, collusion, 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 stuff. right, produces dislocations in the economy. The whole reason it's illegal is because it screws people who are supposed to be unaffected by, you know, whatever it is.
It screws the honest people, which always seems to happen.
Right. It screws those people who are not in the room colluding.
Yeah.
All right. It screws everybody else. And by the way, that's why you're supposed to get 10 years in the pokey. But we don't do that to anybody anymore. And anytime you find someone, then they just, if it's a corporation, they just bill the guy that, you know, that buys their services. And if they're colluding, they can get away with doing that because the other guy down the street who you would go to is also getting hosed. And so as a result, the premise of competition solving this problem goes away.
Well, if you want to sue somebody, it's $1,000 an hour for some big firm.
Well, yeah, exactly. Okay. So there isn't a resolution other than, and by the way, suing people in the main is frequently a losing exercise, whether you win or
without
not.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Right. So the reason, when they wrote Sherman and Clayton, just like the same situation with 8 U.S.C. 1324 when it comes to illegal immigrants, the reason they put criminal penalties in there is that you can't cost-shift a prison sentence.
You can't just have your shareholders pay for it.
Well, yeah, you can't lock your shareholder up, right? You have to go to jail. So that's the reason those penalties are there. And yet nobody will stand up and say to the lawmakers and the DOJ, and it doesn't matter who's in office, it doesn't matter if Democrat or Republican, it makes no difference. You will lock these people up because this is what the law requires. And well, if you don't, we're going to hold you
personally. We've got 5 minutes, plus we started a little bit late. When Carl goes on rants like this, you know, it's fine. He's shouting into the wind. We all know that. But he's shouting, at least. But what do you make of the stuff that Wayne and Andrew send out? They forward from people. And we talk about, you know, we talk about things, you know, all depend on other things seemingly working together. And Carl, you've been talking for a real long time regarding the same people, same companies just seem to be able to just keep doing it over and over again, whether they're drug companies, whether it might be Microsoft. We put these guys out of business. Oh, there's a competitor, you buy those guys. It's you know, it's decades long.
Right.
And yet, Wayne sent something out the other day. You know, and Wayne's all over this Epstein thing and a bunch of other stuff. And his politics is probably different than Carl's, but I think the two of them would have great beers together. Because you guys both have amazing knowledge. What'd you think of that thing they sent out regarding the Barr family and a little bit of the Mick? For those that don't know, the Wayne has been doing a book regarding the Epstein stuff, but it had really not much to do with who is boinking who. It has to do with, who were the people behind this? Where'd the money come from? Were they Mossad? Were they were this? They were that? And how is it they all operated sort of in this country? It's a whole different view. He thinks this thing is 80% way more nefarious than just getting, you know, pictures of little girls.
Oh, that's always been my premise, just because of the scope of it. Yeah.
But he pretty much starts with Maxwell's father.
Right.
Which,
by the way, is a good place to start.
Yeah. And well, now I didn't know this Attorney General Barr was under Trump and he was under Bush 2, yep. Right? Or was he Bush 2 or 1? He might have been Bush, 1.
Bush, I don't remember which one it was, but I think yes.
His dad,
yeah,
was what? Was he a CIA spook? I think.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of this sort of stuff.
Well, but somehow or another, I'm doing this from memory, so help me out here. He went from the CIA thing to somehow he's managing this prestigious school in Manhattan.
Right.
And the guy wrote a book afterward about looking at all the little girls and this whatever. So he's the one who hired Epstein to teach at the school.
Right.
And evidently, Epstein knew a lot. Who's the guy Freeze that taught Epstein everything he ever knew about money laundering? And then this guy Barr went to Kirkland and Ellis. Was that this current firm? So he worked at this huge law firm for a while, then went back into education somewhere else. Was it at Harvard? I mean, these guys, they're in and out of these law firms. They're in and out of government. They're in and out of money laundering. They're dealing with all the. It's this constant string of guys in and out of all these doors that you and I can't even get into, and it just keeps going on and on. And Wayne is the same. He agrees with Carl. Imagine that. That this Epstein was a registered sex offender, and yet everybody, if he had a party, they're there. The guy who's the current commerce secretary, he brought his kids to lunch on the guy's island.
Yeah.
I mean, so if his, what do you think his kids going to say? Hey, Pops, couldn't we have gone to McDonald's instead of taking me to some sex offender?
Chief, if you wrote a fiction, a science fiction political drama with this kind of stuff in it, no one would believe it.
You wouldn't sell a book.
You wouldn't sell a copy of it, right? And yet, here it is, and it's real. It's like, hello? And this is, you know, some of the stuff that is they try to redact parts of it, but there's enough there for you to be able to read between the lines, that you know, the stuff that's got black over the top of it, and figure out what it is that's underneath there. And if that's not the kind of thing that makes you, you know, you need a larger basket to vomit into, you're not a very reasonable human being.
Well, right? When you look at what's happening here, you know, I never heard the sort of Pam Bondi thing, draw your own opinion, but the people in Norway, they're getting shit canned. The guy in Britain got shit canned. You know who got shit canned this morning? The guy from the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
And that guy, he's a worldwide crook. And nobody thinks the Emirates have any morals whatsoever. They can the guy. And yet the people here, oh, no, we can't get rid of these people. We love them.
Yeah, I just, this is why I say this is, this has all the marks of being an organized spook operation across national boundaries. Okay, not just here in the United States, but, you know, our best friends and everybody else, right? And anyone that thinks that we deserve and they deserve anything other than the send us thine asteroid, Lord. You know, we do deserve it because we as a country have not only allowed it to go on originally, but as this stuff has been trickled out and obviously being redacted and covered up, even with Congress. You know, here's what, you know, I talk a lot about the fact that we've become a lawless nation.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. To the point that I could care less at this point if somebody assassinates politicians and business leaders.
Just drive around.
It's so bad at this point that as far as I'm concerned, I no longer care. And I went from being Mr. Law and Order 20, 30 years ago to where I am today, which is if that happens, I'm pouring a couple fingers of scotch and I'm going to sit back and offer toast.
That's why you and I are our biggest joust.
But Chief, here's the problem with this. All right, you want to talk about how in your face this has gotten. Congress passes a law signed by the president that says all this stuff is to be released now. Not in 6 months, not in 2 years, not after you got... No. Now. Now, Congress is the ultimate authority on what is a law and what is not. The president either concurs or if he vetoes it, it gets overridden. You know, da-da-da-da. Okay, fine. Congress does this, and the administration's own attorney general and own people in the DOJ, who he appointed, he signs the bill, and then they give him the finger.
And
they're not immediately dragged out of office by their short curlies out in the middle of the National Mall.
I think that this is scary, girl, but I've been trying to agree with you, and then we got to go. As soon as I agree with you, we got to go. I think that Pam Bondi is much more like every man right now than we care to think. I don't care what the rule says. I don't like it. I'm not doing it.
Right. Well, guess what? She pulled that same crap on Zimmerman, okay? And I was in the middle of that because I was involved in the Libertarian Party, and we had a candidate that was stupid enough to take an actual position on this before there was judgment and before the facts were out, and we actually had to censure him.
Well, did you hear?
I dug into this in great detail at that time. So when she was nominated by Trump, I came out point blank and said, "This woman has."
Okay, but she's. But my point is, she's not alone. And
Oh, I know that.
And the one of the Democratic guys was all over her, right?
But by the way, Chief, if you think Trump didn't know that when he nominated her, you're nuts. Of course he did.
Well, one of the Democratic guys is all over, you know, and it's showmanship for everybody, too. But the best part is he says she won't answer any of the questions. She's lying. She's insulting me. And she says to the chairman, well, she's also insulting you. And guess what the chairman says? Have you hear this?
The exact quote.
The chairman said something about, well, we had Biden's attorney general in here, and he lied, too, so...
Yeah, so it's okay.
So it's okay. I'm sitting there going, I don't want Biden's attorney general lying. I don't want her lying.
Chief, but isn't that the same thing that we have with all these corporations breaking every law in the book and nobody ever goes to jail?
Everybody, when's the last time you saw somebody stop at a stop sign? I mean, it's endemic, like you just said.
Yeah. Hello. We have we're
you know, all right. We're back to plus six on the SPOOS, plus 27 on the Nasdaq. Are we making the save by the dip from yesterday? Same old crap, or no?
I would not, and although I would watch as a lead. You know, right now Bitcoin the futures are trading up almost 3%. So that seems to be kind of a leverage indicator. And I woke up with the dread that my portfolio just got nuked overnight. That seems to be the leading indicator on some of that
stuff. Is the Fed still our back?
The Fed doesn't have anywhere to go. And by the way, if you think Warsh is going to do this, you know, chop rates, no, he's not.
Well, I think Powell's all on board with the saving the market. I don't think.
Well, Warsh... I think Powell's on board, but I think Warsh is you know, look, he was an extreme critic of what was done during 08 with the illegal buying of mortgages and then, you know, Congress ratifying it retroactively.
I can't believe he's the pick.
Well, I was surprised too, but I'll tell you why I think he was the pick, which, you know, people can think about over the weekend. I think Trump knows it's going to blow up this year. And he wants someone to blame when it does.
He would just be that sneaky. By the way, he pardoned a bunch of football players last night. Did you see that?
Well, yeah. But I mean, but he is a sneaky enough SOB that he, and he's got enough business sense, whether you like him or hate him, he's got enough business sense. I think he knows it's coming and it's going to go before the election, and he wants somebody to try to pin it on, and I think Warsh is the guy.
Yikes. SP futures up 2, NASDAQ futures down 4. Have a nice weekend. But by the way, no show on Monday, President's Day, so we'll be back on Tuesday.
Bad news. Tuesday, I'm out of pocket.
Really?
Yep. So you'll have to find somebody to cover me for Tuesday, but I will be around on Friday.
Okay,
so.
Fair enough, bud. Take care. Ricky, right, nice job. Back tomorrow. Back on Tuesday.
That's all, folks.